So here we are, everybody. It's welcome to episode number 5 of the Silver Stumps podcast, the podcast that is targeting the over 60s cricket arena. So if you are a listener, that's fantastic. If you've left us a review, that's even more fantastic. But we've got a great episode lined up for you. And GT, what are we doing today?
Well, Trev, today we've got England captain Richard Merriman reflecting back on last week's World Cup final. He was in Chennai last Friday. A week later, there's a cold northeasterly blowing in Derbyshire, and he's in reflective mood as he talks about what went right and what went wrong in that match, some lessons learnt, steps going forward, and about the great work that the England seniors did whilst they were out there in India. So loads to look forward to.
Well, I suppose we better go over and say hello to Richard again then.
Gentlemen!
Hey!
Richard!
Here he is.
How are you doing?
Well, we're doing great. Wonderful to see you. Last time we spoke, of course, you were in the foyer of the hotel, palm trees in the background, having had a triumphant semi-final victory over Sri Lanka, and you were looking forward to taking on the old enemy, Australia, in the final.
Yeah.
Talk us through, you know, getting off the coach, arriving at the ground. Had you played there before?
Yeah, we'd played 2 games there before. And the first surprise on arriving there was that the outfield was soaking wet. Rather sort of surprised us. Even underneath the awnings where we changed in those wonderful multicoloured Indian tents, it was all wet under there, and we thought, blimey, has it rained?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Had you had a downpour or something?
No, they'd basically watered everything. So God knows how long they'd been doing that for, because it's a big, big ground. So anyway, got out into the middle, and the strip was absolutely dry. It looked exactly the same as we'd seen the other strips in terms of its dryness. However, there was a bit more green tinge on it.
Okay.
And the cracks were quite large. And it was one of those scenarios where you're looking at this and thinking, wet ball, do we want to bowl with a wet ball?
Oh, so suddenly
slow outfield.
Did you feel you had a bit of a decision to make? Because when you were on the coach and you were sort of planning about your strategy, were you thinking that if I win the toss, pretty sure that I'm going to bat?
Yeah, I mean, it was our philosophy that we were, we got a hell of a strong batting lineup, and we were going to take it to the Aussies. We were going to be extremely positive and ensure that, we batted them out of the game. The reality, obviously, we can talk about that in a short while, but the wicket, when we looked at it, it was bowl first, do bat first. Mm. Yeah, chatted amongst some of the senior players. There were a difference of opinion from some. The local chap reckoned it would only get slower and lower, and that the bounce would get more variable. So ultimately, it was one of those where you're thinking, do I really want to win the toss? And having only won 1 out of 6 tosses, I think it was. well, let's hope the Aussies win it. When the toss happened, the coin came down, it fell my way. So I took the decision to back ourselves, to go out there, take it to them. And, that's what happened for the first few overs. Everything was looking good at 7 overs. We were, up into the 40s, and things were looking good. It then got an LBW and brought in Monty, who, absolutely one of those who can really go at the opposition. But we had noticed that wicket was a bit more variable. It was a bit variable in bounce. It was a little bit variable in pace. So, the reality was, though, that the Aussies had done their homework. They worked out the strengths of Monty and bowled to the areas that they wanted to bowl to and set fields accordingly and fielded like absolute demons.
They were awesome.
They were absolutely superb. And so as a consequence, we never really, once Nick had gone, never really got going above five and over. Five and over was steady, it was fine, but we needed to push on. And for Monty to be scoring at only a strike rate of 50%, and myself a little bit higher, you know, the reality was it was not as easy as we thought it ought to be.
No, but as you're saying, you have to also factor in the conditions. You know, you don't always know what a good score is until both sides have batted. You had wickets in hand. You know, you had 152 after 32. You still had like these last 13 overs to go. Yeah. And, you know, normally you'd probably expect to get another 100, probably, wouldn't you, Richard, in that last 13?
So, certainly in the previous games, we'd absolutely hit that sort of figure and more. So one would have expected us to take it on, but Tony Panicastio, their left-arm spinner, bowled exceptionally well. They backed that up with some outstanding fielding. Three diving catches, diving forwards, you know, at any standard of cricket is a great catch. You know, at 60s plus, it's a phenomenal catch.
There was that big steepling caught and bowled, wasn't there, to catch Monty. The one that... Yeah. Graham Shaw smashed back like a tracer bullet that he stuck a hand out. I mean, fair play. You bring your A game to the final, and they really did.
Absolutely. They outperformed us in all three disciplines. And in many ways, it turned out to be a game too far for us. I think, you know, they'd lost their game against the West Indies in the pool. We hadn't lost any games. You know, we felt we were in a good place, but I think what we realised the longer the game went on was that the fitness really got to us. And I think the Aussies, with the fact that, you know, they're used to in Queensland, New South Wales, etc., you know, temperatures that are not dissimilar, I think they were probably more able to cope with the extremes of the heat and humidity. And as a consequence, the more they got on top, the more we seemed to fall away and lose our line and length when we were bowling. You know, we didn't field well. We let balls through. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the Aussies deserved it. In many ways, what we've learned from this now is they've set the bar another notch higher. Yes. And as a consequence, we've got to match them. We've got to match them with our control with the ball. We've got to match them in the field. We've got to, you know, really get our legs across the ground. We've got to be much more agile, much more flexible. We need to look at our fielding and ensure that we are, you know, bringing our A game to these big tournament matches. So, you know, we're disappointed, but out of the disappointment, let's learn. Because if we don't learn, then, you know, it's wasted.
Yeah. What did you learn about yourself and your captaincy during the tournament?
Good question. When you're winning, it's very much easier to captain a side. There's absolutely no question or doubt about that. When the pressure's on, obviously the challenges get greater, and it's maintaining a clear head and maintaining belief in what you're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. I think during that game, we tried very hard to find a combination of bowlers that would slow the Aussies down, which would take wickets. They played Marcus extremely well, Graham Pavey, and you know, the opener. You know, they worked him out as well. And as a consequence, you know, I had to try and be as creative as possible, but at the same time, when we're not bowling to one side of the wicket or we're not bowling a line and a length, then it makes it harder. So I think all round, you know, there were things that we can learn from that and ensure that Yeah, we learned some of the lessons from the Aussies, the way that they did bowl a line and a length. I think there were only two wides that they bowled,
yeah.
Whereas I think we probably bowled, we did bowl a good few more. They probably saved 20 runs in the field through some dynamism. We probably lost 20 runs in the field. We didn't necessarily run that well between the wickets either. So all of these fine margins, when you start adding them all up together, you know, you've got to address these matters. You've got to learn from them and you've got to go stronger next time. What we've done now in the last couple of days is send out a request to all of the squad to identify the things that they felt went well, to identify the things that we could do better, the things that we can learn. Because with 18 players who have all captained and played at a very high level, there's a wealth of cricketing experience and knowledge. So again, you know, let's dip into that knowledge. Let's hear the feedback. Some of it might be uncomfortable. Some of it might be very revealing. So from that perspective, once we've got all of that back in from the squad, we'll be then in a much better place to reflect and assess and plan going forwards.
Richard, it's been so eye-opening and revealing to hear about the cricket, but can you also just give us a flavour of what it was like to be in India in terms of off the field activities? Just give us a sense of, you know, some of the things you did. I can imagine that there was a little bit of pomp and ceremony, but I also know that you spent some time working with the street children out there as well, and working with sponsors and committing yourself to some social causes. So give us that, the things that we wouldn't know about, you know, because I think as well, that's a really important part of spreading the word of cricket and seeing other cultures up close, isn't it?
Oh, totally. I mean, India is no less chaotic than the first time I met it in 1990. you know, your five senses are alive 100%. 24/7. But one of the things that is the most rewarding facet is the fact that Indians just meet you with a smile. Their hospitality and warmth and generosity of spirit is infectious. They are an amazing people. And that goes from, you know, the street children that we met at Kunala. They had absolutely nothing. They were living in, you know, the smallest of spaces, extended families, and yet they smiled. They were full of warmth. They wanted to show us their homes. They were proud of their homes. They were proud of their children. You know, they were just alive. And it was very humbling because, you know, we've got everything we want in this country. And perhaps a lot of the time people are miserable, but the Indian culture, the Indian way of life, you know, they were so warm, so happy. And that was very, very humbling. The work that we did with the street children was so rewarding. A work that we were permitted to do with Bat for Chance was tremendous. And Kit is now with Bat for Chance to help some of these street children and developing cricketers. The work we did with the Barmy Army, thanks to their support and encouragement as well, because you know, the funds that they supported us with were able to be used to, again, support some of these disadvantaged youngsters. So I think that is one of the lessons as well, that over the last 4 years, we have done a great deal as England Cricket Seniors to support the various different charities and those that are perhaps finding life a bit more of a struggle. So whether it was in Barbados with the Passage Road Youth or the primary school that we went and worked with, or whether it's been, you know, with these guys in India, putting something back is vitally important. This game has given us everything. We've travelled the world. We've played with and against the best. We've had amazing opportunities. So if we can put something back and give the youngsters of the future something that as a result of our experiences, then all to the good. And what's interesting as well on that front is that some of the other countries are now starting to follow our model and are wanting to do things with others as well. So it has to be seen that we've got a social responsibility. We're in a fortunate position. Others aren't. Let's do what we can to ensure that the opportunity exists for others for the next 50, 60, 70 years, whatever it be.
So if you're enjoying this episode of the Silver Stumps podcast, don't forget to tell all your friends about it, share it with them. And also, don't forget to press the subscribe button on your podcast app, and then every time we have a new episode, it will automatically drop into your podcast feed. Right, let's go back to Richard, who's now looking forward to this summer's internationals.
We've got a five-match series against the Pakistanis in July, starting 5th of July. They arrive, and they're through to the 21st, I think it is, of July. So there'll be five ODIs in that period of time. They were the original World Cup winners at 60s. So that will be a good battle for us, a good chance to pit ourselves against them. They're being led by Salim Malik. We'll get a bit of an insight into them, and you know this will be where we now need to go and go back to the counties, find new nominations for players who have turned 60, have a look and see in some trial games and matches, you know, what new playing talent is available to us. And reflect then in order that we can get a squad that will hit the benchmarks that we want going forwards.
That's interesting now, Richard, because one of the questions we were going to ask you was, we're hoping that, we've got a few players listening to this who've been in, and there's a lot of excitement around playing over 60s cricket, and there's been a lot of talk about representing your country. So if you're one of those players, you're going to play over 60s this year, what do you need to do to get on the radar? You said about nominations. How does that kind of work?
The initial approach is to come from the player, someone who is worthy of coming forward for a trial. Individuals can't nominate themselves. It's got to come from the county. And that way we will then be able to invite them into some pre-season games, have a look at them. County Championship starts in late April, so we'll be able to see how people are performing during the opening rounds of the County Championship as well. So we've got a couple of months there, May, June, to sort of see how folk are performing. So it means that, you know, that way, hopefully, we are accessing the talent. And, you know, please, if there are players who are listening and they're eager and feel as though they can step up to the mark, then absolutely have words with your county secretaries, have words with your county captains, and let's get some nominations in.
Because one of the things you referred to the first time we spoke to you, Richard, was when we were, GT did a very big analysis of your squad then, and you talked about the fact that you had a lot of all-rounders. And I imagine that's still part of the brief, is it, going forward for the squad for the summer, looking for people to be all-rounders. And also, I guess, having been a captain, you need players who you feel as though can fit in as well. Is that an important part of it as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got to dedicate yourself to the team. This is not about, individuals. This is about, the team. As the World Cup was about the squad, it's not about going out there and trying to do something on your own. This is a collective responsibility, and so we want players who can contribute. Match winners have been absolutely key, and we've seen that in the World Cup, how that Monty's three consecutive hundreds, you know, Nick Newman's electric 100, you know, Marcus's bowling, you know, they all contribute to the team. Some of the fielding we had was outstanding, but in the final, it wasn't. But yeah, we need those guys to, you know, step up to the plate. All rounders, absolutely. You know, I went into every game with seven, potentially eight bowlers, so I got flexibility. You know, and because in these games, the seam bowlers tend to be the ones that club players, county players are used to. They like the ball coming onto the bat. It's much, much tougher as a seamer. But having said that, Jason Korn, Kevin Watson and Mike Palmer did an absolutely fantastic job keeping it both tight and taking early wickets. So, yes, all-rounders, yes. But certainly, out of the three skills, we need two, which are at the top level.
But presumably, there are opportunities for people to push their way into your squad for the summer rather than necessarily think, well, you know, you've got a great squad that reached the World Cup final. You know, it's unlikely to change too much.
We are always looking for fresh input, new vigour, you know, young blood, shall we call it? You
know, rules you out, Trev.
it's needed. You know, we can't stand still. Where we were in 2019 to where we are now is poles apart.
Yeah.
Where we need to be in 2025, or when we go down to Australia in November, December of this year for the Grey Ashes.
Okay.
We need to be absolutely at the races. We can't be anything but.
Yeah.
So yeah, opportunities are there. You know, there's a couple of guys who have spoken briefly about the possibilities of retiring. So you know, there are opportunities. So, Let's see if you're the answer.
Well, we hope to be at one of the internationals. If we don't get selected, we'll bring the podcast equipment along.
That'd be brilliant. Yeah, that'd be absolutely great if we can do that.
So we're looking forward to that. We'll check which is the one that will work best for us. So anything else for Richard GT while he's here?
Well, I mean, thank you for being candid with us, Richard, and really, you know, putting yourself under the microscope, really, in terms of, you know, how you can improve managing the team. Because I think, you know, at an occasion like this, you've done amazingly well to get to the final, but you've been able to step back and objectively, you know, review it as a contest. And, you know, to use your words, the Australian lads, they outperformed you on the day in all facets of the game, and you're challenging, really, you know, yourself and the rest of the squad to, you know, make that step up. So you know, I think that sends a real call out, you know, in all areas, sharper in the field, more dynamic approach with bat and ball if you want to be the best team in the world. And it seems to me that that's still your ambition.
Totally and utterly. And, you know, we're not going down to Australia to come second. We'll be going down there to come back 5-0 winners. That we are still absolutely determined on being the number one country in the world for seniors cricket.
Well, that's brilliant to hear. And do you also see that there could be like a trickle-down effect where if people are aspiring to improve, it's going to improve the standard of all senior cricket?
Totally. I mean, the contrast between some of the countries that we saw that in Chennai to where they were a few years ago, there is a huge journey occurring around the world in seniors cricket. The standard is constantly improving. And, you know, that's why we've got to keep improving. You can't stand still. If we stand still, we'd be actually moving backwards. So we need to make sure that we are setting our targets, hitting those targets, and, you know, maintaining our position as number one or number two in the world.
Well, you know, Richard, it's been great listening to you. And, you know, I can reflect on that. When I first played in the over 50s, I think if you had your own bat and you were still alive, you were in, you know. So, but it's been terrific. So we've really appreciated the input that you've given us and the time as well to come on this podcast. So thank you so much for that.
Well, I've enjoyed chatting with you guys. It's been a joy to share it and, you know, just to be candid and open and to express what we're doing and why we're doing it. It's been a rewarding experience for me as well. So thank you very much, guys.
It's been brilliant to have you on board, Richard. Just make sure that when you're turning out for Derbyshire in about 5 or 6 weeks, you pack at least 2 sweaters.
We did joke that we were, you know, we're transferring from 34 degrees centigrade to 34 degrees Fahrenheit. So
you will. Thank you.
Great.
Take care.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that final episode of our coverage of the World Cup, the Over 60s World Cup in Chennai. And a big, big thanks to Richard Merriman for giving up so much of his time to be on 3 of those episodes. So we are looking forward to catching up with England during the summer, and we will be live at one of those international games against Pakistan with our podcasting kit. So if you come along to one of those games, you could be on this podcast. You could come along and say hello to us and have your comment on the podcast as well. If you want, if you think you can, or if you'd like to come on and do a whole episode with us, maybe you've got something great to share about over 60s cricket, then drop me a note, podcast@trevorleemedia.co.uk, and we will try and get you on. Don't forget to share the podcast episode with your friends. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on your podcast app. And if you leave a review, which you can find on your podcast app, just look at the show, look at the previous episodes, and somewhere on there, there'll be a chance to rate and review the show. That would be absolutely amazing, and we'd be much appreciative of that. Right, we'll see you next time.